Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. Graveyard of Champions, the fascinating story of Liverpool's legendary boxing stadium. It's an enthralling tribute to the fighters, fans and fierce spirit that defined Liverpool's boxing legacy through two venues, the original Liverpool Stadium in Pudsey Street and its successor in St Paul's Square. I know nothing about this, that's why I love my job, but the man who does, because he's got family that are involved from the beginning, is Stephen Barr. Stephen, good afternoon from us. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, I always thought I was going to get you, I don't know, somewhere in Wootton or something like that. But no, you're an awful lot further away from us than the northwest. Where are you this morning, my friend?
Yeah, I'm in a place called Fairfax in Northern Virginia, about 20 minutes outside of Washington, D.C. I've been here for 27 years. I came on a two-year secondment back in 1998, and 27 years later, I'm still here.
Well, you know, that's a bit of a girl's travel itself. Explain a little bit about the spark behind this, because obviously this is a personal story, but also it's got sort of a universal attraction. So what's the family link, Steve?
Well, my grandfather was a professional boxer in the early 1930s. And when I was younger, in the 1980s, actually, none of us really knew anything about my grandfather's boxing career. We knew he'd been a boxer, but we were not aware of how good a boxer he was. And I was at the house one day helping my grandmother clear some things out, and I came across some memorabilia of my grandfather's fight days, and I asked him where all his medals, trophies, memorabilia was, and he said he'd loaned it out to friends and family over the years, and it never came back. So I thought, well, I need to do something about this. So I decided to research his career and went down to the National Newspaper Library in Colindale in London. This would have been in 1986. And I was amazed how much information is actually available online. Well, it wasn't online then.
I was gonna say.
It was all printed copies. So I waded through hundreds of newspapers over a two-week spell and put a scrapbook together for my grandfather and gave it to him for Christmas in 1986. And I remember the look on his face when he was going through all his old fights, and it was amazing. But over the years, it's been digitized, so the information is amazing now, what you can get online on the British National Archive newspaper library. So over the years, I'd built up a ton of information. It was all on my computer in different folders and files. And I retired a couple of years ago, and a friend of mine said, well, you should write a book, put all that together in one place in a book. And I thought, actually, that's not a bad idea. And my grandfather had talked about fighting at the stadium. He was probably one of the few boxers who fought at both locations, the original stadium on Pudsey Street, which is just off a road called London Road near Lime Street Rail Station. And when that closed, a new one was built in another part of Liverpool, in St Paul's Square, which was on the site of an old church, St Paul's Church, which actually was on a graveyard. So, funnily enough, it continued a nickname it had earned in its earlier days as the Graveyard of Champions.
Ah, okay, now it makes sense. What are we talking, sort of late 20s, early 30s here? What weight was your grandfather boxing at, and what time period are we talking here?
He started off as a flyweight in 1929, but over the years he moved up to bantamweight and finished his career very early as a featherweight. He had weight trouble, so every time he got to title level, he had to move up a weight. So unfortunately, he never actually got to win a British title, but he fought many champions throughout his career and beat many of them as well. But it was tough days in those days. To get a title fight, you had to fight a lot of fights before you could even be considered to go for a British title.
So every people go, oh, Liverpool now. They go, oh, you must get this with living in the States. You got Liverpool. And they go, oh, you know, the Beatles, the tour, the docks. It's lovely. I went there and did the whole thing. I remember going to Liverpool in the 70s, and there were still sort of bomb sites from the war. And
in the
20s, of course, it is a completely different, and the 30s, because Liverpool is a gateway, more so than London, to the UK. I mean, it is a bustling, vibrant, but also a pretty hard place to come up through the ranks. So what's Liverpool like in the 20s and the 30s when your grandfather's plying his trade?
Well, it's a pretty, pretty tough place. In fact, when I lived there in the 70s and 80s, Liverpool was pretty rough. It's developed considerably since then. If you go to Liverpool Centre now, it's an amazing city. Liverpool One, they've redeveloped the old dock areas. You've got an area called the Albert Dock, which is absolutely fantastic. And they're developing that whole waterfront all the way up to Everton's new ground that's just opened, the Hill Dickinson Stadium, which is further north out of the city centre, about a mile or two north. And all that area is being redeveloped now. So Liverpool today is a beautiful city. But back in the day, it would have been pretty rough, typical northern working city. And obviously, it was a dock, a major port, and it was a magnet for boxers coming over from what was then the Empire, particularly from West Africa and the Caribbean. And so it was a bit of a melting pot. And you had a lot of Irish immigrants back in those days as well en route to America. A lot of them stopped off in Liverpool and never continued the journey. So, you know, it's quite a centre for immigrants and working class in particular, because, as I say, it was a major port city. So boxing was a thing that a lot of working class men in those days turned to make a living.
And especially at the weight that your grandfather's boxing, I mean, bantamweight, flyweight, I mean, there's nothing worse. I mean, we think of Irish now, we think of like Tyson Fury punch. But
yes,
back, you know,
yes.
But the Irish have always been known for their wiry little so-and-sos who pack a ferocious punch.
Yeah, well, back in those days, Liverpool and Britain in particular dominated the lower weight divisions. There was a lot of, obviously, because of nutrition and all sorts of things, a lot of the people were much smaller, and bantamweights, featherweights, flyweights were pretty common back in those days. And we dominated. We had world champions, European champions at these lower weights. Not so much at the heavier weights in those days, but certainly we dominated a lot of the lower weights in the 30s.
And it's interesting, I hadn't really thought about this before, but yeah, I mean, I was thinking, okay, Liverpool, it's the Irish, but obviously Liverpool is the gateway into the Caribbean. And you think about the great fighters that come out of there, you know, John Conte, for example, who is, you know, is the first name that I think of when I think of Liverpoolian fighters. So in a way, it was an enclosed world in the Northwest, away from perhaps fighting further down south.
Yeah, well, in those days as well, there was only two major boxing centres. One was the National Sporting Club in London, and there was another one up in Newcastle. And 1911 was when the original stadium was built, and it was, it was built, it was already there. It was a stables, then it was a skating ring. And in 1911, a couple of entrepreneurs decided to open it up as a boxing arena, and it became sort of equivalent and as popular as those in London and Newcastle. And to reflect that, there was a world title fight held there in 1912, soon after it opened, which sort of acknowledged the fact that Liverpool had come of age and had a what was a top-ranked boxing arena in the city. And that arena existed from 1911 through to 1931, when a cinema was built on. It was knocked down and a cinema was built, and the owner or the promoter at the time, a guy called Johnny Best Sr., looked around Liverpool and found a new site in another part of the city nearer to the river, and built a purpose-built arena which became the new Liverpool Stadium. And that one existed from 1932 until it was demolished in 1987.
Wow. I mean, so how many people are we looking at? Oh, is it all seater? Is it the let's look at the two of them. So the first one, if it's an old stables, are we looking at not much bigger than what? Couple of thousands maximum?
No, well, the original one could hold around 3,500 people, but often there were more people because people used to stand as well. But it was mainly all-seater, so as I say, it really moved boxing from the back rooms in small little dingy halls to a proper arena where people were not ashamed to be seen. It was a proper arena, 3,200, 3,500. And the new stadium, which was built in 1932, of similar capacity, around 4,000 seats, all unobstructed views. It was quite state-of-the-art at the time. There was no stanchions or pillars in the way. The seats were arranged such that no one seat was directly in front of another, so the patrons got a perfect view of the ring. And as I say, it was an iconic venue, certainly in Liverpool, and hosted many other things. It was they hosted wrestling there in the 30s, right up till the 60s and 70s. In the late 50s, 60s, it hosted musical concerts. The Beatles actually played there. I think they were called the Silver Beatles back
Blimey.
In those days.
Okay, fair enough. That is
in 1960, it was a Gene Vincent concert, I believe, and the Beatles were one of the supporting acts with Jerry and the Pacemakers. And in the 70s, it became a big rock concert venue. So you used to get people like David Bowie, Mott the Hoople, and Queen and Pink Floyd and many other great bands like that would perform throughout the 70s at the Liverpool Stadium.
Here's the interesting thing there, because at the time in the 30s, you mentioned it coming out of the back rooms, but radio takes off in a big way in the 30s. And if you want to, and also, you know, movie tone news, etc. And, you know, it's difficult to cover a horse race or a football, you know, a football match, you know, because it's a big space. But obviously, boxing fits it perfectly because you don't need that many cameras, and if you're on the radio, you can describe the fight because it's happening right in front of you, and that really sees boxing take a leap at all levels, isn't it? When boxing, you know, in the 30s, is, you know, you're thinking about the international bouts and you know, on the radio, so it really does move out, as you said, from those back rooms.
Yeah, well, you've summed it up there nicely, because I think all of us could remember those great radio broadcasts of world heavyweight fights back in the 20s and 30s and 40s. Funnily enough, the stadium never allowed broadcasts into Johnny Best Sr., who was the main promoter and manager of the stadium, didn't allow broadcasting. I don't know exactly why, but he didn't until the war broke out. And because of a lot of local Liverpoolians being fighting on the various fronts throughout the country and in Europe, he allowed broadcasts to go ahead during the war, and that was the first time it was allowed. And obviously, as TV developed in the 50s and 60s, boxing, live boxing in particular, became less popular because people could you know, watch all the great fights in the comfort of their living room. So back in the day, there were thousands of boxing arenas throughout the UK. Most small towns would have a boxing arena, and boxing events were put on live almost weekly. In fact, the Liverpool Stadium, right up to the 50s, put on live shows every Thursday without fail. So it was very popular live sport. But as TV came in, and there was competition from other sports and various other social reasons, boxing, live boxing, waned somewhat, and that was sort of the death knell for the stadium. Because you know, when it finished, the last fight was in 1985. There was only two or three fights a year at the stadium by that time, so it was declining.
But it did give a sort of springboard for talent to get out of there. I mean, there is a hardcore. I mean, you go to any boxing event, you know, IMC boxing down here in Spain, and there is, you know, there are still very much clubs. I mean, you've got one of the greats who put his sixpence in, John Conte. I mean, if you, there is a man who enjoyed the 70s. And, you know, early 70s, yeah, I think my sister might have had a picture that my mother made her take down on her bedroom wall of Conte, because he was, again, he was a reflection of the true Liverpool, wasn't he, at that point, Steve?
He was. I mean, he was literally a superstar. I mean, he not only was he a boxer, he was almost a movie. He was a film star, really. He was at that status. I don't know if you remember, during those days, there was a sporting event called Superstars.
I do indeed.
And John Conte was on that, along with another great boxer, not from Liverpool, John H. Stracey, who actually now lives on Merseyside. He often attends some of the Merseyside former boxers' meetings. But yeah, him and John Conte were both good friends and won their world titles in the early 70s, and both of those guys appeared on Superstars with many other, you know, Kevin Keegan and Trevor Brook, and great sports stars all competing in various events. Yeah, he was a legend, and I was so proud and honoured that he agreed to write the foreword for my book. I met him actually at the stadium stone unveiling. I don't know if you know, but there's nothing in St. Paul's Square, where the Liverpool Stadium used to be, to denote that it was ever existed, that there was ever a boxing stadium there. But a guy called Terry Kavner, who was a member of the Merseyside Former Boxers Association, kicked off an initiative to put a memorial stone in St. Paul's Square. And that was unveiled back in August last year. And I was invited to come over for the unveiling. And John Conte was the guest of honour who did the unveiling. And at that meeting, I talked to him and put the proposition to him, and he agreed. And a few weeks later, he phoned me up, and we discussed. I interviewed him to talk about the foreword, and expecting just a 5-minute chat, and an hour later we were still talking. You know, it was amazing. Funnily enough, I had a doctor's appointment, and I was talking to John Conte, and an hour later my appointment had gone. I thought, well, I'm not going to tell him I've got to go. I'm going to
absolutely
until he's finished. And he was very, very enlightening, very funny, a very modest guy, absolute legend.
I mean, with a book like this, I suppose it is just showing that Liverpool is. I mean, although it is wonderful that Liverpool has now sort of reimagined itself, you know, as this big tourist attraction, and the Beatles are front and centre, but it's also important to remember the other facets of Liverpool, like the docks and like the boxing, you know, because, I mean, it's great because Liverpool is such a... And Liverpool is a city like none other, that mix of people and cultures. So it's important, isn't it, to say it's not just, you know, four guys playing brilliant songs and Jerry and the Pacemakers. There's more to Liverpool than that, and we should be celebrating that as well, Steve.
Yeah. Oh, and don't forget the great football team Everton that's also in Liverpool.
I'm not even going to ask what exactly. I'm not going to even ask, obviously, which one you support then, obviously. But you are wearing blue today.
Absolutely. But you mentioned the Beatles there. There's a very, very interesting connection. Johnny Best Sr., who was the main driving force behind the stadium, and his son, Johnny Best Jr.,
right.
who took on the stadium promotion and management after his father died, was the stepfather to Pete Best, who was the fifth Beatle, the drummer. Original drummer. So Johnny Best Jr. was in India during the war, and he met Pete Best's mother, Mona, and they got married and came back to Liverpool, and Mona Best opened the Casbah Coffee Club in West Derby, and that's where the Beatles originally used to go and play in the basement, and Pete Best, obviously her son, joined them as the drummer, and he was the drummer, I think, from 1960 to 62. So, you know, unbelievable connection. So the boxing and the great musical legacy, the Beatles in particular, is linked through Pete Best.
The book, I could talk to you about this probably until another hour, or like, you know, like Conti himself, but I'm going to run out of time. I've only got a minute and a bit left. The book is called Graveyard of Champions. If you go to our virtual bookstore, listeners, you can click on the front cover and it will be winging its way to you by a well-known distribution service. Steve, if people want to find you, do you have a website? Do you do the social media thing?
No. Well, I'm on Facebook with the. I'm always posting on the Merseyside Boxers and Friends website, Facebook site. So, but I'm. I don't have a website myself. But just one thing I'd like to say: I've got no shame in asking people to go out and buy this book, because all the proceeds I make from the book will be donated to a former boxers charity. A lot of these guys are struggling nowadays, obviously, with health issues and particularly through the rigours of boxing. And so I've decided to support hopefully a local Liverpool boxers charity, but certainly to help former boxers. So please go out and buy it.
Absolutely. Just give me where they can find you on the Facebook page so they can find it. What's the Facebook called again? Liverpool?
It's Merseyside Boxers and Friends.
Right.
So if people look that up, they'll see it's a popular site. There's a lot of posts about local Liverpool boxing.
The book is called Graveyard of Champions. It is by Stephen Barr. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.